Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow with Jeff and Sam, and this evening's Base Camp Campfire Conversation. We're going to be talking about the movie Moneyball, and I'm hoping that all of you saw this movie that are on. If you didn't, we are going to spoil it for you to a degree, but actually you're going to want to see it all the more. This was an amazing movie. It hit me much like The Legend of Bagger Vance and other movies like that, a phenomenal movie. So what we want to do is not so much act like movie reviewers as much as we want to talk about what impacted us. What did we see? What did it speak to our heart and therefore really to everyone's heart because of the commonality of the story that we live in with the uniqueness of our own lives and hearts. So tonight, Jeff is going to be hosting the call. Sam and I are co-hosts. So, Jeff, let me pass this to you.
What a privilege it is to host or facilitate this conversation about Moneyball tonight. When it comes to baseball, I just got to tell you, I'm a player. I can't remember when I started playing baseball because my memory doesn't go back that far. I just had a neighborhood filled with kids. And so we started playing at a young age. We were really good by the time we got into our first games, and I've played it all my life. I found here in Charlottesville that baseball has the ability to cross language and cultural barriers. There's Mexicans in our neighborhood. They are real workers around here, but what they do for entertainment is they play baseball. And I can't speak Spanish, but when I go down there, they put me in center field, and all of a sudden we have a common language, baseball. To me, baseball is a bridge between North and South America and everything in between. And I'm digging on guys from Venezuela if they could be a closer for the New York Yankees, you know. So to me, there's just so much benefit around this game. I can remember after 9/11, when really our country was turned upside down, I think the first time I was able to look at something on TV was when George Bush came to Yankee Stadium in the World Series. And I looked at that, and I couldn't be more proud. And I actually thought, okay, we're going to make it, you know. And what better place to have that, take place but on a baseball field. And I coached my son in baseball for years. John Grisham built a baseball field down here. And it's a little league complex to die for. And I became a surrogate dad to him and all of his – well, to my son – well, I had my son and then all of his friends. And it's really interesting because the first one is going to get married this summer. And I got a personal invitation from him, you know. So it's fun to have watched these kids grow up. And as far as me, I love to play. Unfortunately, I mostly play tennis right now. Played three sets today. I'm going to tennis camp next week. I mean, I wake up in the morning, and that's the first thing I think about is I want to play. I'd love to do a podcast sometime with Pablo, who uncovered a fear of mine on the tennis court that had resulted from an unhealed wound. It's been amazing what's happened in my tennis game since then. So what I'm trying to say is you learn a lot about yourself when you play. Just yesterday, I went to this physical therapist guys and complained about my back hurting after tennis. And after about a half hour, they figured out one leg is longer than the other. I'm a quarter inch off on my leg. So they built a bridge for me so that I'd be level when I'm playing the sport, you know. And the sport always brings out the inefficiencies in you, you know. It always challenges you. So to our question that Jerry Smuck had asked, can you walk with a limp and be healed? I would have to say, yeah, that would be me. You know, without a doubt, I definitely have a waddle, I found out. But they built a bridge. I played today, no pain at all. But anyway, baseball, it's my favorite. It's biblical, Genesis 1:1, in the big inning. And that's where baseball starts with me. I got one confession to make. I'm such a Yankee fan that when we're doing campfire conversations, if there's a Yankee game on, I've got it on my computer off the side. I'm watching the game. So this is what I love about campfire conversations, because you can watch the game during them, you know. And so I'm hooked. I'm in it. And I love the game. And what a great movie. Before we get to it, I want to talk about this base camp gathering we had last weekend. And it was amazing. We took each man and we gave them 3 hours, tell their story. We asked clarifying questions. We had listening prayer, and then we gave them feedback. And what was stunning was the feedback. and how men would see things that I would never see, I never saw. And I just sat there in amazement. And again, the body of Christ is a beautiful thing when it functions. And one of the best ways to learn another man is to see him in action. So I'll talk about my two hosts here. One of the things I saw with Gary is that he sees what's underneath. He sees what no one else sees. And so his feedback is invaluable. It's always, you know, very interesting. It's stunning sometimes. And I noticed with Sam has the ability to take what's important, what has been said that's important, and then begin to ask questions. And Sam gets to where he wants to get to by asking questions. And when Sam gets a sense and he's on the trail, you let him go. You just let him ask questions and start taking notes. You know he's going the right way, you know? So anyway, how do we get training for our heart, to have the eyes of our heart open, to see what we need to see, is sometimes listening to another man or listening to everybody collectively about what they saw. And so it's what I love about this movie. We can all see this movie and we can all participate tonight. So if you have a scene that you liked that really impacted you, hit star 2 right now, and we're going to get to you. There's no guest tonight. You're the guest, and we're all in this together. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about this movie. But I would first like to ask Gary, what's this movie all about? When you watched it, why did you love it so much?
You know, this movie has such strong themes in it. And they're similar to the movies that grab us, that move us, that we have to think about and want to work through and inspired by. And, you know, the movie is, you know, so much about a young man. As we see him as a young man, they go back and you see the desire of his heart. He loved baseball, loved the sport, kind of a lot like The Legend of Bagger Vance, where he was so good at it. He was better at it than he was the amount of training that he had had, and he had this dream, and then you watch the assault come against him, where he's in a sense pushed out into his dream, into his desires too soon. He kind of gets over his head playing professional baseball, and then that desire is just crushed in him, and in many ways it's either taken away or he goes to resignation, and then of course in your that's his younger life, and then you see him living in the present, and he's staying in his desire as far as in the field of baseball, but now this transcendent desire for the sport goes from him playing, from him being a scout, to now him developing a team and players, and just what he's up against, that he is, if this is going to succeed with, in a sense, quote, the cards that have been dealt him, he's going to have to approach his desire in a completely different way. He's going to have to go against the flow, you know, against the stream, the current. And as soon as he does that, all that comes against him, you know, just what an amazing story. And not only that, but I think it also has such a strong theme of partnership, alliedship, friendship. And so I just think this movie, using the analogy of baseball, probably hit all the major themes and elements that we have in life. This was not a baseball movie, just like Bagger Vance was not a golf movie, just like Riding Giants is not a surfing movie, you know?
Right, right. Hey, which friendship spoke to you the most in there? Just I want to bring up that subject for a second. What was it about friendship?
Well, you know, I loved the friendship that Billy Bean had with, and I can't remember the young man's,
I think it's Pete Brand.
Yeah, Pete, that's right, with Pete.
Yeah.
The way he called him out, the way he invited him in, the way
right.
he walked with him, the way he not only gave to him and trained him, but also showed him an enormous amount of dignity. Is dignity and friendship, which I think those two go together.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's good, Gary. What's interesting about Billy Bean is the things that have come against him, even as the movie opens. You know, he has this quote where you have the good teams, you have the bad teams, then you have 50 yards of crap, and then you have us, you know. So he's orienting to the reality of the situation. Not only that, but he's gone through a divorce, right? So he loves his daughter, but his daughter's living with his ex-wife now. So he has failed in baseball as a player. He has a losing or a team that's in a difficult situation, a low budget team, and he's got this divorce, and we find him in this situation, and what happens is what's stunning, I think. But Sam, I'd like to go to you and ask you what was your favorite scene in the movie?
Well, I don't know if I have a favorite scene as much as I was actually thinking the thing that struck me most about the movie was the friendship that was between Billy and Pete, because I like the fact that these two guys are doing something that nobody's ever done before, and there is a tremendous amount of opposition. The old guard does not want this to happen. They're saying you can't reinvent baseball, and Pete is such a likable character. You know, he's brilliant, but he's a little nervous. You see he's tentative in his answers. Billy needs him, and the two just form this very unlikely friendship, this very unusual friendship, and I love that part. I mean, I felt like they were there for each other. They were watching it for each other. They needed each other because they were in such a hostile environment.
Yeah.
And I just loved that friendship. I loved it. I love the ending.
Yeah.
So I guess if you had to say what was my favorite scene, it was the scene at the end where Billy thinks he's blown it. He feels like he has to hit. He has to win with this team. If he doesn't win the last game of the World Series, he's lost. That's the way he feels. And Pete shows him a little clip. I think you guys know where I'm going. Pete shows this clip where I think it's a 260-pound catcher who never rounds first base. He hits and he stops at first base. He hits into center field. And he decides to round first base, but he trips over it. So you see him scrabbling back in the dirt, back to first base, and everybody around him is laughing. You know, and your heart goes out to him. Well, it turns out they're laughing because this guy hit a home run. You know, he doesn't have to run back to first base. He can go the rest of the way slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete is showing this to Billy to say, you think you hit a single, but you hit a home run. You know, and Pete's showing it, Pete's saying it's a metaphor, and Billy says, yeah, I know. but Pete's just showing his heart for the guy. He's just saying,
yeah,
I really respect you. I see what you've done. And other people see what you've done. He's reaching into Billy's heart and saying, you really hit a
right
home run, man. And that's what Billy needed.
Right.
That's what Billy needed.
And here's the thing about a friendship. You know, a lot of times you run across a lot of people who say, I'm an encourager. And I go, great. You know, we need more of those than we have. And I love that gift. But what Pete was able to encourage Billy Bean because he had skin in the game. His neck was on the line with him. And so when he says to him, hey, this was a home run, metaphorically, what he was saying, that's when the Brad Pitt character can receive it because Peter had some skin in the game, you know, this real friendship. But, you know, what's one of the things I'd like to talk about, and what's so interesting about the scene that Sam just described is that probably happened to a lot of guys, even on this chat line right now. There has been something that you have offered in your life, the glory of your life. You took a risk to do it. You actually hit a home run, but you tripped over first base there somewhere along the line and found yourself in the mud, and everyone is laughing. And you're crawling. All you're doing is crawling back to first base. And I've seen this more and more. That's the nature of the enemy. If you show your glory and you do something spectacular, you can know for sure eventually you might wind up in the dirt. You know, there's opposition to that. And I think the important thing is to have the eyes to be able to pick a person up off the ground and go, you know, let's take a look at what you just did, because you might have just hit a home run here, you know. I think it's that important. And for a lot of men, when you ask them what their calling is, straight up, they don't really know. They won't just articulate right away what their calling is, almost as if we're fearful of saying And if you're not sure what your calling is, one of the ways to begin to look at it is to look at when's the last time they got really assaulted for doing something and offering the glory of your life. Because it's almost like coming in the back door on this now, where you go, you know what? What I just did right there was amazing, and that's why I'm in the dirt right now. You know, we always get assaulted so close to where our glory is. And so to me, it's a beautiful scene, because what I did and what I'd like to ask the other men in the audience right now is, has that happened to you? You know, I could remember we had this thriving men's ministry at our church, and for all the praise that, you know, I was not trying to take that would come my way, I knew it would be equally as bad when I had to leave, when there was time to exit. I knew it was good. And I found myself eventually on the dirt, crawling back to first base, and kind of everybody laughing, you know. And, you know, sort of like, you hear these voices, I told you so. And but the reality of what we did in the cave for those men for those 3 years we were there with them, we hit a home run. We did something nobody else had done. We had awoken their heart. But eventually I wound up paying for it. You know, and that was a painful process I went through. And actually now there's some healing and restoration and recovery of a lot of those relationships. But, you know, I remember that on the ground, you know, and I kept having to say that to myself, you know, that hey, this was really important. So thank you, Sam. Great scene there. So Gary, is there anybody on the line that would love to share what they saw in the movie?
Yes, in fact, I am unmuting Alex, who has observation he wants to make. And Alex, you're on.
Okay, thank you. You guys got me?
Hey, Alex, good to hear your voice.
Hey, good to hear yours too. Well, Gary and I watched the film last night, me for the first time and him for the third. And I don't know if it was just because where I was at, but I had a hard time putting things together last night with it. You know, covering a whole year of a baseball season in 2 hours is hard to do that with a lot of continuity. And so I found it pretty choppy, but thanks to Gary's comments, it kind of guided me through and prepped me for the next scene. And while we were sitting there talking afterwards, I kept trying to think, you know, what's my favorite part of this? And I didn't really get anything. Then when I woke up this morning, I knew what it was. And it was the scene where they're in Cleveland and Billy is trolling like a shark through the cubicles there in the Cleveland management office.
Oh yeah.
And he's looking for Pete. And because he saw something in Pete there, you know, here's this guy, he's young. He's obviously not an athlete. What in the world's he got to do with baseball in this picture? But Billy saw something in him, and eventually he locates his cubicle and goes into it, and he says, "What's your name?" He says, "Who are you?" And Pete says, "I'm Peter Brand." And Billy says, "Who are you?" And they go back and forth like that a couple of times. And finally, Billy says, "I don't give a rat's ass what your name is. Who are you?" And it's that kind of a question that we all need somebody to ask of us. It's that question that we need to be able to answer. Who am I? Because when we've got that put together, then we can move from there. We've got an identity that so much of us are struggling to find. And then it's very interesting because there was I was journaling some of this morning, and there's these situations that happen between guys when inadvertently a man opens a window into his heart. It's just there for a very small moment, and I want to be able to recognize those moments. And I want to be able to ask the question that opens that door farther. Sam, you're great at that. Gary, you're very good at it too. I want to learn how to do that. Because one of the things that I love the most in talking with a guy is watching the lights go on. And so many times it's a question that flips the switch. And it gets them going. As I was working on this, all of a sudden my mind connected to another scene. And it was the kitchen scene between, what's his name?
Scotty H. and David Justice. Yeah.
And Justice comes in, you know, he's the well-experienced ball player, and he comes into the kitchen and asks Scotty, what's your big, you know, they're talking about how it's going out there, and then he says, what's your biggest fear?
Mm-hmm.
And jokingly, Scotty responds and says, the baseball being hit in my general direction. You know, they both laugh, and DJ replies and says, that's funny. No, seriously, what is it? And you watch Scotty's face. And it's just, you can see his face just falling, the expression just sliding off of his face. And he says, no, seriously, that is.
And the next part of the scene, there's
this awkward silence because DJ doesn't know what to do with that. And finally, as Scotty walks off, he says, well, okay, good luck out there. Or good luck with that.
Good luck with that, that's right.
That was a window of opportunity into Scotty's soul that DJ missed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get a chance to go after. He didn't take the opportunity to go after it. You know, how many times do each one of us find ourselves in that place?
Yeah.
But you know the thing that I like about what happens in the whole scene. What's the first baseman's name again?
Scotty.
So he doesn't have someone pursue him in the kitchen there, but Billy Bean and Pete, they say he can do it, and they keep putting him out there. And they give him a chance to prove himself. And in the end, he has confidence. You know, isn't he the guy that hits the home run?
Yeah, he ends
to win
the
20th game.
Yeah, to win that one game.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes we need someone to encourage us, just to say, "Hey, you're doing fine." Sometimes we need people to say, "I want you to step out and I want you to get up to the bat." I want you to get up to the plate and take a swing because I want you to be able to see that you can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And really, that's what Billy Bean and Pete are doing to this guy. They're putting him at first base day after day so that he sees he can do it.
Right.
Well, and you know,
go ahead, whoever's talking.
Oh, it's just me. I was just going to say that, as you said, Alex, I mean, I love the question, who are you? And I thought, you know, wouldn't that be great to do with somebody that we meet over lunch, cup of coffee, something. It's a casual meeting, not just a five-second meeting, but you're talking. And, of course, they introduce themselves. You know, I'm Gary Barkalow or whatever. And to be able to look that person in the eyes, and after they've introduced their, you know, given their name and all this, just to keep saying, yeah, but who are you? I mean, that, and to do it obviously gently, you know, but I just think that would turn somebody's world upside down in those few minutes.
That is good.
I just think that's genius.
Right. Yeah, and then there was a third scene that I connected to in this whole theme, and that was the batting cage, where Billy comes past the batting cage, and there's DJ, you know, swinging at the ball, and after an honest discussion about his declining career and why the Yankees paid $3.5 million to get him off of their roster.
Oh yeah.
And but what does Billy do in that? He turns that thing around and he said, I didn't get the exact quote on it, but he said, I want to milk every drop of skill and ability and experience out of you before your career is done to help these other guys to the max. something to the to that effect, that he recruits
yeah.
him to be a partner in the turnaround of this team.
Yeah,
and if
Alex,
I remember the context right and the chronology of it all, that's when the team starts to turn around.
You know, it's an interesting quote, Alex. I have it right here. I'm not paying you for the player you used to be,
uh-huh.
but who you are right now.
Yeah.
You're smart. Be a leader. And, you know, what's interesting, I think the real turnaround there is actually Billy Beane. Billy Beane had really separated themselves from the players.
Right, right.
And I think he was getting over something, and he started to engage the players.
Mm-hmm.
He had to come in harshly at first. He had a clean house, call an audible on a couple players, but he had to come back in the locker room and start encouraging the guys.
Right, right.
And you're right. I think that's when things get turned around.
Anyway, those were the scenes that connected with me. You know, there are a lot of other good places and great quotes, and I can't wait to sit down and watch it again. But
it was that's
what connected with me. That's a lot of where I'm at.
Yeah.
Great, Alex.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Alex, before you go, who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I am Mountain Man, the beloved son of the king.
Amen. I love it. See, Gary wants to do it politely, but I don't want to do it politely. I want to take a knife to people's throat and I say, who are you? No,
but
really, who are you, man? And if
one
I,
bullet
if I
in the head
an
or five in the chest.
There's another quote right there.
That's a good quote, man. Unfortunately, too many people take five in the chest and die slowly, you know? So thank you, Alex. That was great, man.
Yeah, that is really good. And you know what, Jeff? You are not quite that rough with people. I think your bark is worse than your bite.
I know. I want to be like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there anybody else on the line that has their hand raised?
No one has raised their hand so far. Now, I do want to throw out an idea that John Hart put out here, and he was referring to bringing up the scene where Scotty was playing first base, which he didn't really want to play, which he was so uncomfortable with, and yet he's the one at the end in the movie that hit the winning home run in that last game that they won. And so John said, sometimes God puts us in a place that is very uncomfortable, like first base, because he has a deeper purpose, to hit a game-winning, record-breaking home run. Now, that's a fascinating idea, because he probably didn't think that maybe the most profound thing he would do would be actually up at bat versus on first base, which he was so afraid of. And I just thought that's an amazing idea, that sometimes we don't really exactly know why we are, where we are. Talking about mystery, right? We just
right.
We play the games, we have it, and we wait for the moments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. I'm a lot like Scotty H, the first baseman, because the first time that Billy goes to his house to meet him, he says, "How's the arm?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm making progress. I'm doing pretty good." And then Brad Pitt comes back and says, "You're never going to throw again off behind the plate," you know. I guess he was a catcher. And he goes, "Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right." You know, and then later on you catch up with him and, you know, David Justice says, you know, how's it going? It's going pretty good. I'm making some progress. What do you fear? That the ball would be actually hit to me, you know? In other words, I put up this front, you know, and I want to be funny or something. And it's like, don't ask any questions. But when the questions come, all of a sudden, yeah, I'm not really doing that good, you know?
You know, one of the things I liked about the movie was they call it early on, what is it, like, we're on the island of misfit toys? Isn't that the quote? Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And they really do get a lot of the guys who just don't fit the norm. You know, so the classic baseball scouts and everything are just looking for a certain look, feel to the person. You know, they're looking for someone who looks good, in fact. And
right.
And yet
right.
these guys put together a team of misfits, and they're splendid. They're incredible.
Well, and what's amazing about that, and I'm about to put Dan on. Dan has his hand raised, but I – you know, it would be interesting, too, to talk about the scenes that there's so many great scenes. There's not probably one you can put over another, but there are scenes that move us more than others. And I am so moved by that scene where that line comes up where they say they're like an island of misfit toys, where he goes through and he says, Pete says, you know what, there are players out there that are completely overlooked because of biases and because of perceived flaws, and yet there's a winning team out there. And that so moves me because, you know, the one thing that frustrates me, that moves me to action, that gets me mad, is seeing people overlooked, you know, taken
Amen.
Out,
Amen.
Underestimated.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yep.
And so I was so love that scene where he could see things that no one else could see in the sport of baseball.
Yeah, right.
You know what that is in you, Gary, that hates that? That is God in you. He's the same way, man. I mean, tell me he's not exactly the same way. Look at the cave. You know, when God is really going to move the nation of Israel, and they're going to move them all the way to Israel, and it's going to be in the greatest state they've ever been in. It starts in the cave of Adullam when 400 guys come to David. They're in debt, depressed, and generally discontented. And those are the guys that take David all the way to Israel. You know, and what happens so often is that in the hierarchy, because I know it's another thing you have a hard time with, Gary, hierarchy, unfortunately, what it does is it gets people to look down their nose at other people. And they miss that the real talent, you know, is like Rosie Grier says in the movie Never Cry Wolf. The real gold is sitting in their living room south of 60 watching TV, you know. No one's ever really come to them and said, hey, I want you to play ball for me, you know. And so they sit there, just like your e-letter is saying today, without that invitation into the greater adventure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good. Well, hey, let me put Dan on the phone. Dan, you are now live.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
How you doing?
We going good. Go Atlanta Braves.
Okay. That's good. I'm all right with that.
Okay, we're muting you now.
Okay, that's all I can do. Good seeing y'all. Listen, let me bring
Dan,
up.
Dan, I'd be real.
Yeah.
I'd be real suspicious, Dan, if you like the Yankees here, you know.
There you go. Yankees is a bad word down here. That's right. A couple of things I noticed in that movie, though. That meeting where the scouts and the analysts, you know, the group of men that have baseball experience and, you know, they're just all gathering, making plans. I'm like, well, you could really relate that to a deacon's meeting or elders or a church committee meeting, you know, or I guess even a men in your business that you have at home, you know.
Somebody mute me.
Sam gets me cranked up, man.
I thought the same thing.
But what I liked about it, I mean, they're after replacing Giambi. They're after just settling for what's always been there. And it's not a power struggle or anything like that, but Billy wants more. You know, he just wants that, the way I look at it, abundant life type thing. So I could really relate to that, but I know everybody listening has experienced that, whether it's in a church meeting or whether it's at work or, you know, even in your home life sometimes, you just tend to settle rather than just going out for more. And the other thing was like when the guy said, I believe he used the word ostracized, I call it being put in prison, you know, just because of what you're thinking, what you want to get done here, and no, we don't do that. And then, boop, you're in prison now. You know, so I had a question, though. Y'all can relate to this.
Okay, hold on. Now, hold on. Before you get to a question. I just want to talk about that. Let me just read these two quotes, okay? This is Peter Brandt. There is an epidemic failure in the game to understand what is really happening.
Mm-hmm.
It causes us to mismanage and misjudge our teams.
Well, isn't that the game of life? I mean,
this is exactly what I'm saying, you know, and this is the whole idea of our of these calling retreats, you know, is to really orient yourself to what's really going on here. So the question is, who is God really? And then who are you really in this game? You know, so these are the orientation points. And then Peter goes on to say, baseball thinking is medieval. They are asking all the wrong questions. And if I say anything about it, I'm ostracized or I'm a leopard.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well,
so,
and I love that as you're talking about that, Dan. I just think about the recruiting of elders or electing of elders and deacons, and it's just like those recruiters, right? They're talking about how does that guy look? What kind of reputation does he have? What will he bring to the church as far as the appearance of who we are? You know, what's his confidence level? I love how Billy Bean just is doing that thing with his hand going, yada, 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 yap, yap, yap.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
it. I just,
yeah.
that is what the world does. And unfortunately, there's a lot of world in the church, meaning the body of Christ, you know?
Exactly. Kind of have to fight that. One thing that, just a different take, too, is, you know, when he was going around, I wonder what would have happened if Billy, you know, he was going around, he was getting a lot of no's. I need $50 million. I need this. You know, if he'd have got some of that, reckon he would have been settling more. But I guess what I'm getting at is he had to see a lot of no's. He had to look at a lot of no's before he started looking at yeses. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. Dan, I think that's enormous that if he had been given extra money, he would have gone after another Giambi. But
right.
when he went back and he realized, I have no extra resources, that's when, you know, he was thinking, we got to change this game. I got to come up with a new way. And I really, you're right. That is a core point to the movie because that was a turning point right there when he was denied resources. And I'll tell you what, my mentality is I could do so much more if I had more resources. And I wonder if God's saying, no, actually, it's the opposite.
Exactly. Mm.
Yep. Yeah. Mm. Wow, that's good. Because really, one of the heroes of the movie is the owner, who says, no, you have to find a way with what you have to field the winning team.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and we always want to, yeah, we always would rather just have the money. And he had to dig deep, right? And he had to find Peter Brandt at that point, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Billy was my hero because he wanted to win and he wanted to change the game. So I like that in that character.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about Billy was that he had to have the courage one day to go, you know what? I'm really not a player. I'm a scout.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a guy who could see what other people have in the way of talent. And he had to make that realization. He had to make that transition on center stage at, you know, he's playing for the Mets there in center field, you know. And that's a courageous thing, you know, to go, you know, mm-hmm. this is really – and he was developing. Like Gary said in the beginning, he started so young, he's in his 20s and developing. So I really respect him. Yeah.
Hey, Dan, thank you so much. Those are great points. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Anybody else on the line there, Gary?
Yes. I have Tom Hancock on, so I'm going to unmute him now.
Tom Hancock.
Tom,
hey,
you are
Tom
on,
Hancock?
My friend.
Hey, brother. Hey, everybody. What I'd liked. You've just been mentioning a lot of it, but the sequence there, it was really touching, or what you said, Gary, moving, is you got this guy, Billy, and he realizes, man, the way we're doing it, it's just not working, you know, sitting around with all the religious guys at the table, and they're giving all their suggestions and criticisms, and he's going, nodding his head, no, but he doesn't know the way either. He's like, no, we have to do a different way. And then you have this fat, intellectual, nerd guy who he provides the way. And I love it that, you know, I think they said, hey, this guy that would cost $3 million here, if you just look at what he really is going to provide, and we can get him for $237,000. So I just, what I love there is that there's this longing for something better, and there's this this openness for it. And sure enough, the one who provides the way is someone, you know, the rest of the guys say, what's he doing at the table? Like, get him out of here. And he provides the way, which is basically it's getting the undervalued. It's getting the gifts that are hidden, and it's getting them out. And the vessel quote that does it, it's awesome. I mean, it makes me think of Jesus, like he came from a despised town, and the Lord, he takes not the proud things, but the low things to shame the pride of the age. So that was really touching to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great point, and I love the fact that, as you said, Pete was an outsider to baseball.
Right.
As far as we know, didn't play baseball when he was young, didn't follow baseball. It seemed like he kind of fell into this job in some way, and he had these fresh eyes on the sport that no one else had the ability to see what he could see. And even the other man, remember they went after that, wrote this book, at least according to the movie, wrote the book, the same thing about looking at statistics and how do you get runs. And, you know, what did the scout who had been fired said? He said, and of all things, he's a security guard at a pork and bean factory. So they discounted him completely. But he had these fresh eyes that no one else had because he didn't live inside of it.
Mm.
So, hey, Tom, thank
okay.
you so much. Great, great comment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. So, Gary, are we winding down our time?
We are.
Or do we have another question? Okay.
Nope. We have no more questions listed here that I see. So.
Okay. I'll do a final comment, and I'll ask you and then Sam. But, you know, there's this idea, and here's what Billy Beane at the end says. He says, if any other team wins the World Series, good for them. They'll drink champagne, celebrate. But if we win with this budget, we'll have changed the game. And that's what I want. You know, I want this to mean something. And, you know, I just want to say for the problems that we have and the places that we're stuck, maybe that's just the recipe for brilliance, actually. You know, that there's an answer out there. And that what we need to do is not look at that problem where we're stuck as a wall, but sort of an invitation to begin to find the Peter Brands and the other guys that are needed to find a solution to this particular problem in our lives. And so to me, it's very, very encouraging. And so, Gary, I'd like to ask you on any final thoughts on this movie that you'd like to leave.
Yeah, just with a personal story. When I saw this movie with Lee, and I may have shared this before, it was in the evening, and so as we were leaving the theater, I said, Lee, wait inside here. I'll go get the car and bring it around. And as I was walking to the car, maybe 90 seconds, I was hit by a question. I really believe God was speaking this into my heart, and he brought this out of the context of watching the movie. But nonetheless, I wasn't thinking about this at the moment. And God just kind of said to me, Gary, you've given up, haven't you? And I just realized I have. I have been in resignation for weeks, and I found myself discouraged, depressed, heavy, emotional in not a good way, and God really got to me through this story of another man where he could have given up so easily because of the lack of resources and then having all of his inside circle kind of going against him and having one man walk with him and say, we can do this. And even that that line towards the end of the movie where Billy Beane looks at Peter and says, so the real question is, do you believe in this? Because Billy was saying, listen, I got a high school degree, I'm 40-something, I'm toast if this doesn't work, but I'm in. And he said, you're young, you got a degree from Yale, you've got this unbelievable internship, you got everything going for you, are you in? And you have less to lose. And I was so hit by that, and I really just wonder if maybe one of the greatest illnesses of our day is resignation, because as I've gone through this, I realize I think so many of us, we live in resignation, and the symptoms are discouragement, depression, anger, lack of heart, and I've just been really wondering if that's kind of that is the infection, that is the disease of this day. I don't know, but this movie really woke me up.
Wow, that's powerful, Gary. Thank you. That's another podcast right there. If I start asking questions, we're going to be here for another hour. But thank you for being vulnerable and being
so
honest.
Welcome.
Because so many of us are in that situation. So thank you. Sam, any final thoughts?
Well, I think one of the things that struck me was right at the very end when Billy says to Peter, I made one decision in my life based on money, and I swore I'd never do that again. And sort of the idea of making decisions based on some kind of self-promotion or, you know, some personal gain, but it ended up gaining him nothing. And he, you know, from now on, he's just going to do what he's called to do. He's not going to do it out of a personal gain. He's not going to do it for his to gain something for himself, he's just going to do it because it's the right thing. This is what he's made to do. And I was moved by that. I thought it was a great line.
Yeah, excellent. It was.
And as a result,
very
He's doing something that's going to cost him money and cost him reputation. He's doing something that's going to cost him all kinds of stuff, but he knows it's the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, guys, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Jeff, one more final thought as you wrap this up. Anything? Or did you give it to us?
I have a lot of questions. I want to keep going. I want this to be one of those podcasts that we talk till 9:30 because I have so much to say. I will give one word of warning. I loved when Billy Beane was talking on the phone with another GM and he got what he wanted. And as soon as he got what he wanted, he hung up as the guy was trying to continue to talk. And the guy says, "Hey, when you get the right answer, just hang up." And so I tried that with my wife the other day. I just want to tell you guys, don't do that with your wife, okay? Business deal, try it out. Don't do it with your wife. So.
Okay, that's wisdom. And then on the other hand, with this call, I think we got what we needed out of this call, so it's time to hang up.
Unbelievable connection.
So anyway, you guys, thank you. This was really fun to do, and it's fun to find something out there that stirs our heart and then talk about it, and so that we continue in it, we flow in it, we let it continue to speak to us. So I want to encourage you guys, there is a page up on Basecamp where I posted the quotes that that Jeff got for us, the same thing you got in the email. So I would encourage you, you want to have a dialogue over some of those things, jump on in. Let's keep talking. There are other quotes that grabbed you. Let's put them in. And so, anyway, thank you, Jeff, for hosting this. Sam, thank you for co-hosting with me, and it's been a great evening. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Good night, guys.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Bye.